Today is Sunday, May 15th, 2022, and I say the Shavua Tov to everyone on the screen and the handful of people in the classroom. Let me deal with some of the questions before I pick up on the regular lecture. First of all, I want to dedicate today's shir. While I was mourning my dear student, Dale Pianko, Dr. Dale Pianko, so at the same time a great Talmud Chacham died, Rabbi Nutter Greenblatt, I believe it was the uncle of Rabbi Ephraim Greenblatt, if I'm not mistaken, the Rabbi Robert Ephraim. They were Tamid the Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. And I just want you to read a description of Rabbi Nutter Greenblatt from Memphis, Tennessee. I never met him, but I heard about him many times, including from students of mine. And a Talmud writes, Israel Shiner writes about Rabbi Nutter Greenblatt, that he was a leading student of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. In his youth, he received the bracha Farichet Yomim for Rabbi Avram Yitzchak HaKook. He was in Memphis since 1949, traveled all over the South for over 70 years as a senior mashgiach of OU Kashrut, as a mohel, Erev expert, mikveh expertise, and any other field that a local Rav or Jew needed assistance in. He was probably America's foremost expert in gittin, and went to extreme lengths to ensure Jewish women received the get. And here, for those of us that know the history of Yeshivas Chochanan, in addition, he was the last surviving member of the Reverend Michael Feinstein's Kollel in Boston, the first Kollel on American soil. So I want to tell you that really, what awaits a full research would be a very fascinating volume. You would have to base yourself upon my own research in Bernard Revel, the Rav, and my Talmud, Rabbi Dr. Seth Farber, and his book on the Rav in Boston. The Boston Kollel, it was the first Kollel in America. Art Scroll, of course, will have a lot of problem publishing such a book. But nevertheless, when the Rav took over Yeshivas Chochanan as his father's replacement, May of 41, he was followed by a cousin, Rav Michael Feinstein. Rav Michael Feinstein was a nephew to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And I don't know whether we're talking about here, Rav Nutter Greenblatt actually studied with the Rav, or he arrived at the Kollel when Rav Michael took over. Obviously, if it was a Talmud of Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe sent him to the Kollel. And that Kollel is an interesting facet on the American scene. I've spoken about it many times in depth on the relationship between the Rav and his father, etc. But suffice it to say, when we speak about Rav, an individual who linked us all the way back to Rav Avram Yitzchak Cohen Cook and the Rav and Rav Michal and the Kollel in Boston, Rav Nutter Greenblatt, Memphis, the South, the OU. It's a very unique individual. And I'd like to dedicate today's shiur in his memory, Yehei Zichro Baruch. My Talmud, Stuart Tulichovsky, asked me... What? I can't understand.
Was there a request to be unmuted?
Rabbi Twesky, I don't know. But if Rabbi Twesky, David, if you have something to add it at the end of the shiur.
Right, maybe it's just the way...
Okay. I want to go further. Why am I being shown sideways? Is there any way to make my face more, more normal? Okay, that's better. Good, it's better. I received the following question. It's also a question I've dealt with many, many times over the past generations. And as a matter of fact, at one point I spoke on this very topic in public, and the rabbi of the shul, 1 week later, gave a one-hour rebuttal of what I said. Nevertheless, I believe the truth was more on my side than his. But the question is very simple. I'll read the question. What about the Rav's attitude towards going to college? You said that the Rav took it as a given that in these modern times there's no debate that one should go to college. And of course he's asking the question, is college just a vehicle to earn a living, panasa, or college as a Torah mother vehicle to learn more about Hashem through secular studies? Please clarify. And the answer is, it's not clear. If you're familiar with the second volume of the Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, where I translate two of his talks, wherein he's different than Rav Shmuel Feil Hirsch, there is no question that the Rav was not a Hirschian. He distanced himself from Hirsch, and you get the feeling if it would be an ideal world, the Rav would be very, very happy to sit and learn Shas and Paiskim and be Mefalkel and come up with Chidushim, Derech Reb Chaim. Secular studies would play a very little role. It's not like Rav Hirsch, and I can't go again. I know the 19 letters by heart, but it's not time now to do it. I've done it in the past, but there's no question that Rav Hirsch viewed Torah Derech Eretz as a lachatchila, and having nothing to do with an individual, universal environment in which you find yourself. The Rav seems to feel that, look, we're living in modern times, we're living in the Western world, we're out of the ghetto, we must master not just Shas and Paiskim, but the ability to live in dignity in the Western world. And there's no question that's what comes across in his talks at YU when he discusses the curriculum in Maimonides and his son and the parents complaining they have too much homework, too much to do. And the Rav says, well, what can I do? The times demand it. If you study Ish Halacha, you get a different viewpoint. There the Rav takes on Meluah Tarif Kivshucha, and the Rav sees a concept of why you as being indigenous to Torah. You have to conquer the world. You have to conquer civilization. And it has a much more Hirschian overtone than you find in my second volume on the Rav. So I let the question hang fire. When I gave this talk, the rabbi interpreted as if I'm saying the Rav is opposed to college and he's not a YU person and he prefers Lakewood. Nothing can be further from the truth. But there is a very big difference between Rav Hirsch and the Rav, or between the Rav talking about the uniqueness of Yeshiva and Yeshiva College in comparison to his magnificent essay, Ish HaHalacha. So I leave it to you. What's interesting is that the Rav raised many different Talmidim. And there's no question out of the 40s and the 50s, and I reckon myself a Talmud of the 50s, which I was, obviously. I just spent a little time with the Rav in the 60s, in a classroom basis. As far as a personal relationship, it continued till the day he died. But I reckon myself a Talmud of the 50s. And I knew many of the Talmudim, the 40s, the 50s, there's no question that they were much broader than what you come upon in the 60s and certainly into the 70s. And I repeat the story I've told you, but I was visiting the Rav in Boston. It was a memorable Shabbos in my life. I spoke with him for hours and learning, and I knew how to learn a little bit at that time, so it was on a different level. And he was surrounded by a few Talmidim who came from New York to spend Shabbat with him. He was all alone at the time. And among these Talmidim were my own Talmidim who had grown older and now were Talmidim of Hakam of the Rav. The Rav calls me aside and he says, yes, they know how to learn and they know how to learn, but they're hashkafas, they're crazy. Don't pay attention to them, but learn and kenenzei. So I thought the Rav is playing to the audience, you know, I'm a religious Zionist, and these guys are half Zionist, half anti, half Natura Carta, half Agudat Yisrael. They're opposed to secular studies. I have a doctorate. A year later, Aaron Bat visits the late Aaron de Goy. Again, it's a name that you don't know today. Rabbi Aaron Bat, a great individual, Talmud Mavak of the Rav, slightly older than, if he would be alive today, he'd be slightly older than me. And the Rav calls up his eye, the same scenario, and says word by word what he said to me. So when Aaron comes back to Israel, I say, oh, now I feel better. I know he wasn't playing to the audience, but this was really the Rav's thinking. And also Sam Dershowitz told me about a conversation he had with the Rav when they were circling Logan Airport. They couldn't land. There was too much fog. And for a half hour, they were just circling, and Sam was having the time of his life bothering the Rav about these type of questions. So there's no question that he was 1,000,000% and 1,000,000% for and open and in favor, and he had reservations about Blakewood. I could tell you endless stories, it's not for now. But in the ultimate philosophic gestalt, I'm not certain which way to go. And in the Rav's own family, you see, he has great-grandchildren, grandchildren in many different worlds. He has nephews. I don't have to go further than Rabbi Meiselman and Rabbi Shurkin, which is a cousin, and Rabbi Yitzchak Lichtenstein, who has revitalized Torah Vadas. And there's no question that they're Torah-only people if they could have the choice. So I'll leave it stand at that if anyone has more information. But I don't think you can correct me. I just think we have two sides of the coin, and it's a question of balancing out if it's 40-60, 50-50, etc. Okay. Now, just corrections in general, nothing to do with me, but we've spoken about Rabbi Weller and the American rabbinate. And Ira Bigel writes to me that the story I told you last week was incorrect. There's a picture from, Mark, how do I get this picture on the screen? A picture from Ira Bigel's parents' wedding. And it's an amazing picture standing in the corner with the hat. That's Rabbi Pinchas Mordechai Teitz. Hard to recognize him, young, dapper, clean-shaven. Writing the ketuvah is Rabbi Louis Weller, the Rav of the Brisk Yeshuv, whom I spoke about. On the other side, leaning over the collar, on the other side, the chatan is in the middle, that is a conservative rabbi, Rabbi Benjamin, let me get his name, 1 second, Rabbi Benjamin Englander, who is rabbi of a conservative congregation in Irvington, New Jersey, where my mother was the secretary. In other words, Iris correcting, it was not Rabbi Friedman, it was Rabbi Englander. Interestingly enough, I remember Englander from YU. I believe I taught Englander as well. I checked out Benjamin Englander was a JTS graduate, 1934. So the chances are he was a Shema Torah mitzvah. If you weren't the student of Mordechai Kaplan, if you weren't a reconstructionist, the chances are you were a Shema Torah mitzvah. The conservative movement, and again I have to be very brief, I've lectured endless thousands of hours on the topic, they believed by taking down the mechitza and having mixed pews you would save Judaism. Okay? I don't have to comment. Period. Okay. Exclamation point. Now, Jeff Francis, Rabbi Francis from Atlanta, corrects me. My mind heard Chafetz Chaim, so I thought it was Chafetz Chaim Mismach. I did go to Chafetz Chaim High School in Los Angeles. After high school, I was privileged to be a Talmud of Rabbi Yisrael Chait and the Menachel Rabbi Reuven Mann in Yeshiva B'nai Torah in Far Rockaway for many years. So he's not a Chafetz Chaim graduate, he's from a Talmud of Rav Chait with that Far Rockaway Yeshiva. As you know, the Chait brothers, there was one who was the Rosh Yeshiva, the Chafetz Chaim program here in Israel, and there was, I think his name is Moshe, I knew him, and his brother Leon taught with me in YU. We started together in 62, and I only left in 69 to go in Aliyah. Leon Schenck remained many more years. They were a wonderful, wonderful family. And they also go back to the Kollel in Boston. Now, regarding what we said about teachers and inspiring students and the fact that Israel sends teachers to America today, so Rabbi Francis made a very important point, that the matzav today is infinitely better. Why? Because you have today second and third generation Israelis who also have a total command of English language and Anglo understanding. I don't have to go any further than my own family. I just spoke with my one grandson who's in teaching like his grandfather in the same type of teaching, Torah to influence, etc. He's at Shalavim, and my grandson has total command of English. It's very valuable for Shalavim because they have students come into the high school from all over the world, and my grandson gives a class once a week in English that everyone can understand easily, even those that, let's say, from Denmark, but as a second language, they know English very well. Certainly those from Australia, South Africa, America, Canada, English is their native language. So I correct myself, and this is what the Mizrahi is looking for today. I see one of my own students, Dr. Charlie Hexter, went to visit his grandson, who's on Shlichut to Montreal, Torah Mitzion. And again, this kid comes with a native English background. What they're lacking is baseball, and I saw from my great-grandson, who was just in America with his other grandparents to celebrate Pesach, Baruch Hashem, Baltimore, and he came back, a six-year-old kid already, is a Bucky in baseball. So I think it takes 1 or 2 days, and you can pick up baseball. So I thank Rabbi Francis for that correction. Finally, I want to mention Rabbi Yaakov Traeger also wrote to me that how inspired he was by my talk on teachers, the influence, the day schools, and he's been teaching in day schools for 30 plus years, including Solomon Schechter schools, and no one ever told him what to teach. And you can inspire, and I know kids have come out of Solomon Schechter, who had a Rebbe who was a real Torah Jew, and these kids went on to become Talmidei Chachamim, learning in Kailulim in Israel, and all that goes with it. Now let me pick up where I left off today. Today, next week, a very important Shiurim. Tomorrow, one of a kind, I start this year with the one topic on which the Satmaruv and Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik and the Lubavitcher Rebbe were in total agreement. And Aaron Rakefet says, thank God I didn't listen to them. I'm not a chassid, I'm a Talmud. But leave that for tomorrow. Now, with this Shaila that we're dealing with, I want you to understand the implications. I am willing to bet that there isn't a day school in America, including more from day schools, that don't have children who are goyim. I'm willing to bet. We are so intermarried, as you see, the ambassador to Israel. There's a beautiful article today in today's Jerusalem Post with, I don't want to confuse the names again, but the son of Stewie Pilichevsky, who is my Talmud, it's a son, I believe, Uri Pilichevsky, who's an activist and lives in Midbar Yehuda, and the Yehuda Bishomron, and he's established a friendship with the new ambassador. Well, this ambassador, these kids want to go to a day school, no one's going to say boo. Kids are not Jewish. So what do we do if we take the viewpoint that can't teach Torah to a non-Jewish person? We have to close down all the day schools. And here I come to a problem that I've mentioned many times, and I discussed it. I just want to tell you, I discussed it with Rabban Soloveitchik as well. What was the problem? When I came to YU in 62 as a Rebbe, as a Rosh Yeshiva, Reitz, etc., So Dr. Belkin made it tonight with me that I have to continue in the act of rabbinate. I'll write about it. I'm writing about Dr. Belkin. I'll explain his point of view, etc. So Yeshiva had a Dr. Belkin called the Community Service Division, find the shtela for Rabbi Rothkopf within commuting distance of the yeshiva. And that's how I wound up in Maplewood, South Orange. Now, I'm the first rabbi building an Orthodox shul where there never was one before, Essex County. And it's all a medical doctor and orthopedic surgeon. People are doing a favor, coming to make a minyan. I did not have a Shabbos minyan of Shomer Shabbos. People drove, parked a block away, two blocks away, and came to the shul. So I was troubled by it. In other words, by my calling a minyan and declaring we're having a shul and we're having a minyan, Misayei L'Dei Avera. Okay. So I spoke with Rabban Soloveitchik, among others, and Rabban said to me very simply, look, your task is to establish a shul. What happens afterwards is secondary. But you're responsible to run a shul. You don't have to be haunted by all the secondary matters. And the truth is, because I established that shul, 60 years later, Maplewood, New Jersey, the shul is in its third location. It keeps on expanding, expanding. There's an Erev Lamahadrin in Maplewood, parts of South Orange, I'm told. There's a mikveh that is, I don't know how many mikvahs you have like this. It's like the mikveh that Rabbi Kavalsky built in Yerushalayim, Reb Shalom Dovber Kavalsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that is state of the art, and handicapped women can be tovelet in the mikveh as well. So Baruch Hashem, I established the shul in Maplewood, South Orange, 60 years ago, mamish, 1962. So you see, what Rabaran told me, I think, carries over here. If you're going to start worrying that the non-Jewish children, we're not going to have a day school, look at the other 90%+. Where would the other kids be? Where would the B'nai Torah study? Where would the Balei Tshuva study? What the day schools did in America, and you have to give Mr. Mendelovich tremendous credit, although Rabbi Revel thought of this before Mr. Mendelovich, but he was highwayed, he was pushed aside by the 30s, the Depression, and then Hitler had many other worries on his mind. But he spoke in terms of a national movement of day schools. Mr. Mendelovich picked it up and turned it into an absolute reality. And this is an achievement that we all benefit from. Now, if you're going to worry about the Goyisha children, what about the Jewish children? So I think that Reb Moshe's approach is very valid, very correct, very successful. Baruch Shekivanti L'Dafka Dolim, that Reb Moshe says. I mean, I couldn't get over it. You need good teachers, and you have to inspire, and you can't be angry. And B'tuv Tam V'dad, I'm quoting Rav Moshe. In Hebrew, modern Hebrew, they use a language, Metikut HaLashon, the sweetness of the mouth. And Rav Moshe's right, and I agree, we won't succeed 100%, but 90% is not bad. And even where you don't succeed, remember those two lines in Rav Moshe, and where he says that b'dieved, it's a schut for these non-Jewish children. Let them convert, inspire them. Some of them may wind up being no more observant than the average Jew. So the mitzvah they do, they get schar from now. They're mitzvah v'yoseh. What they do wrong is b'shogei. So it's not so terrible. It's a schut. It's a very powerful thought. And when we deal with the whole question today of Geirut, I'm always influenced by this tshuva of Reb Moshe. And you've heard me say many times, I would agree with Kahana and all his proposals, if we only have enough teachers, like my own Rabbi Constantin, a real Constantin, I told you, I attended his class, and I was overwhelmed. My wife and I walked out inspired by seeing what he was doing. Now, there were many, and they insist the couple has to come, the Jewish man or the Jewish woman. We have to take for granted they're as ignorant as the nunchu, even if they grew up here, but if they went to Chinuch Mamlachti, they know absolutely nothing about Yiddishkeit. Nothing, nothing whatsoever. I have a vague concept, you don't need to come at some Pesach, but it doesn't go beyond it. And it's very powerful, but you need people like Rabbi Constantine. Now, on the opposite point of view, and Reb Menashe Klein goes back and forth, though at the end he says, I can't argue with Reb Moshe. But he has an interesting Devar Torah that puts a pin in my balloon. And he says, we see from Yaakov and Esav that you can't educate a Jewish kid and a non-Jewish kid together. What did Chazal say when she walked, when the pregnant mother walked by a Beis Medrash, Yaakov wanted to run out. When she walked by a church, Esav wanted to run out. So you see, you couldn't educate them together. That's what the Reb Menashe Klein says. But halakha l'maisa, he says, I bow to Reb Moshe. And it's what I say, if we're going to be worried about teaching non-Jews Torah, then we have to close down all the day schools. And we have this problem, it's not just in the United States, it's in Russia, it's in the Ukraine, it's in day camps that you run for religious children, and it's all over. It's in Israel, it's in the United States, it's who knows what it'll be with Russia and the Ukraine, that's a different story. Hundreds of millions, billions of dollars were put in, Chabad and Jewish oligarchs who came back to their Judaism. I can tell you stories. I know. I visited Russia 5 years ago. I saw with my own eyes what's being done. And all that may go down the timyon, which just shows we got to build and build in Israel. I always say, where I grew up in the Bronx, it's a sakonet nefasha to walk by day, let alone by night. The cover picture of Washington with the Washington Avenue sign, I didn't take it. Normie Gold took it. It's hard for me to say, Zichrono Levracha, Rabbi, not Rabbi, Dr. Norman Gold said, Rebbe, you can't afford to have them shoot you. He says, I'm divorced. I have no responsibility today. No one will miss me. I'm going to go and take the picture. And that's what he did. He took the picture. But Sakonet Nefasha, Mei Sharim, where they built 150 years ago, 140 years ago, figure it out exactly. Today, the property is invaluable. Every Baal Tshuva would like to live in the heart of Mei Sharim. So we have to build in Israel. But all right, this issue hangs fire. I come down on the side of Reb Moshe, and Baruch Shekibanti L'das G'daylim. Okay, now, the book I introduced to you, I mean, this is amazing. Where are you going to come up with the question of teaching Torah to Gentiles? So I admit, when I did my Shiurim on the Holocaust years ago already, and those I consider my best Shiurim, everyone I've heard this one say, my Shiurim on Geirut with the best, this one says, the one on the International Dateline, but I consider the one from the Holocaust were really, it was a good 4 or 5 years worth of Shiurim before Holocaust and after. There I dealt with Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg, a famous Tshuva, teaching Torah to Goyim, the lectures in the synagogues under the Nazis, and there always were, this is why I always teach, you can't kill every Arab and every German. There were always good people among those who hated us. And there were Goyim who came into the lectures to give support to the Jews. So what do? You stop the lecture. He deals with it. So this question comes up. I don't know of a better source to give you, because you're going to see he quotes all the different viewpoints and he gives you the sources. It's, I have to say, it's by Ari and his wife Miriam Wasserman. Making It All Work, it's the volume I showed you last week. And it's a fascinating volume for a woman in the workplace. And we're not going to change the clock. All the women work today. My wife and I suffer, but That's the reality. My new, my latest granddaughter-in-law and grandson, my dear grandson and granddaughter-in-law came to visit us yesterday, and she's telling us she's in high tech, and what goes on, and who they appoint, and all the from women, this is Yechachot Slim, Yerushalayim, and it's all in English. She speaks perfect English to us. We can just slightly accented, but perfect, fluent English. And we asked her, the new lady, who's a big boss now, she's from South Africa. I said, what language are you saying? She looked at me, it's all in English. So they work and they're happy. And the one Baruch Hashem, I'm not happy. I have one great granddaughter-in-law, one after another, with a doctorate in this and a doctorate in that, and high-tech here and high boy, and it's unbelievable. And they have children, and the children at the age of 4 months already are farmed out to school, my own, they call it, nursery. So women work. So in this book, he raises the issue, which I could have never dreamt of. At work, people see a from Jew, and this particularly probably is outside of Israel, and they ask questions. Although I have to say in Israel too, if you read the Balei Tshuva, the Memoir Literature, if you read some of the Alonim that are written, Karov Eilecha, which is the Hasidic outreach today in the Torah, the religious Zionist world, a wonderful freebie on Friday, Karov Eilecha, I believe it's called. So there's always an article on Rosh Yehudi, the Balei Tshuva who are working Tel Aviv. And you read the memoir, I just read the memoir, the person writing it, how he became frum. And it was in the army. He saw frum Jews and he started to ask questions. So it could be you have, even in Israel, but I would imagine this more in America. Why don't you eat with us? Why must you observe kosher? Why do you cover your hair? Why do you have so many holidays? Why can't you come to work most of the month of September into October? You have all these questions. So he raises the issue, are you allowed to answer them, speak to them? It's teaching Torah to Gentiles. I never in a million years thought of this. Okay, let me begin with some of the answers so we can make our case firm. And it also applies to the day schools and what's going on here in Israel, going on in the States, Canada, Russia, Ukraine, England, South Africa, Australia. I guarantee you there isn't a school that doesn't have one or two or more children that create this question, this quandary. So one answer, and here he quotes the Netziv, the Meshuv Dava, Rabbi Yehuda Yediyah, the Yehuda Yalet, Rabbi Yehuda Asan, Hungarian. And this is a very basic approach. Again, I've lectured on this extensively in the past in the context of Torah Shabbat Path. The whole prohibition of teaching Torah to Goyim is only Torah Shabbat Path. There is no prohibition of teaching Torah Shebichtav. And the proof is very simple. Torah Shebichtav is available to the whole world. It's written down, it's translated, there's Targum Shivim, etc. It is given to the whole world. Torah Sheba'al Peh is uniquely and only for the Torah people. And this, I cited many sources, it's a Medrash Rabbah, and it's a Yerushalmi as well. And what's underlying this is, look, if you give the Torah to the whole world, the Jewish people aren't any different. It goes back to a play that, a song and a play for children that every Hanukkah, they redo it. I remember my daughters going to see this play in Hanukkah 1969. And it's Simlat HaShabbat Shel Hanukkah. The Sabbath dress of Hanukkah. And what's the play? The play asks a very simple question. Lama lo kol yom Shabbat. Why can't we have Shabbat every day? And the play goes on to explain, if you had Shabbat every day, then Shabbat would not be different, would not be unique. The entire feeling of Shabbat, of putting on a Sabbath dress, Sabbath clothes. If Kol Yom Shabbat, then Shabbat disappears. Same thing with the Torah. God had a dilemma. If you give it to the whole world, you're going to wind up with no observance whatsoever. You have to have a unique people that God can depend upon. And even with this unique people, I'm skula, I'm bechira, call it what you wish, only the chosen few will be able to live up to all the demands of the Torah. And yet, you want to civilize the world. Okay? Without the Old Testament, look where the world would be at. And even with the Old Testament, I don't have to tell you what went on in Buffalo yesterday. And that's the worst. There were two other shootings in America, I think Dallas, Milwaukee. But Buffalo, one white supremacist wiped out 10 people, at least the dead, 20 are injured, who knows if they will all live, etc., etc. So we have a real problem. So God hit the following solution. Give the Torah to the Jews only. That's Torah Shabbat Peh, the heart of it, the elaboration. The Torah Shebichtav, that'll be available to the whole world. And this takes us back to the very question. Where do you draw the line? All right. Torah Shebichtav is absolutely no problem. So when a Gentile asks you about Shabbat, about Tashrit, about Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkah, Pesach, Shavuot, it's all Torah Shebichtav. No problem whatsoever. It's the Torah Shebaal Peh that keeps us uniquely Jewish, and there we cannot teach the Gentiles. Al pi hadvarim ha'ela, it's you only, Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebichtav, available to the entire universe. Well, this is the basic concept, the basic understanding. I think I'll go a drop further and tell you, what about a printed Mishnayot in English? When I was growing up, Danby Mishnayot appeared, Oxford publication. I remember I bought it for $5. I thought it was the greatest buy I ever had in my life, and until today, we're talking 70 years later since I bought it, I still occasionally look into Danby. Fabulous. Herbert Danby, canon of St. George's Cathedral in East Jerusalem, or St. John's Cathedral, East Jerusalem. So I remember going to Rav Yosef Weiss, and I asked him, are we allowed to use it? He said to me that Canon Danby had a very good chavruta. It seems any difficult Hebrew word, he went to Rav Chaim Yosef Zonnenfeld, and Rav Zonnenfeld helped him with the translation. There's also with the Professor Siegel, a Rabbi Siegel at the Hebrew U, was a great expert. He also helped them. So I had a psak from Rav Yosef Weiss. We can look into the Danby Mishnah. All right, then you take Sansino. They were the first ones to translate the entire Talmud. There was a Rockinson's translation before, but it was only selected parts of the Talmud. Here you had the entire Talmud in English. Well, I never yet saw a key on it that a Gentile can't use it. So what do you mean? Torah Shebaal Peh? Any Gentile can open up Mishnayot, can open up Talmud. But I'll tell you, there's a big difference, and I think this is the heart of it. Fine, he can open it up. On that level, the Torah Shebaal Peh is no more than a Torah Shebichtav. You can open up Dan B from today to tomorrow. You can open up Sansino from today to tomorrow. You can open up nowadays Art Scroll. I don't see Art Scroll refusing to sell to non-Jews. You can open it up from today to tomorrow. It is still a locked Torah. And this is the secret of Torah Shebaal Peh. It's passed on orally. You must have a Rebbe. Without a Rebbe, you can have all the Danby and all the Sansino and all the Schottenstein, and you will not master what Shas and Paiskim are about. When you have a Rebbe, you become part of the Torah Shebaal Peh, part of that system, part of that approach, part of that universe. And that we don't encourage a guy to enter. And the facts proved me out on the ground. You had professors, Herford Travis, Harvard, published, Ohev Yisrael, Strux Medrash, Ohev Yisrael. Professor William Albright, they say he was a master of difficult Talmudic words. Fine, but it was Torah Shebichtav. It was vatans, it was books. It was not the oral ongoing tradition. So, on this level, there's no problem whatsoever for a person at work answer the questions, explain Kashrut, explain Shabbat. But when the non-Jew will try to eat shunt during the week, it's not going to have the same taste as a Jew's chalent on Shabbat. And you all know the Gemara I'm referring to. And this is the secret. And this is a very healthy approach. I agree, don't shoot me down and say, well, a kid in Yeshiva Ketana, a kid who thinks he's Jewish and winds up in the YU Smicha program. And I think Rabbi Heschel Schechter said every year they have to convert 5 or 6 kids in the various kollelim in YU. He's part of Torah Shebaal Peh. All right. On one hand, I can say it's the exception that proves the rule. On the other hand, there are other answers, and you'll see it ameliorates that particular question. And I think I told you, I had a shayla here in the Kollel where I couldn't fall back on what Rav Heschel said, because the young man at the time had a wonderful student, Yorei Vesholin, it's years and years ago, tall, good-looking, and he can't sleep at night because his grandparents, his grandmother, or great-grandmother converted in, I'll mention the community, Winnipeg, Canada, 100 years ago exactly, 100 years ago today. And he was worried they were not sharing their Shabbos. Great-grandfather came from Europe, like many other Jews, got lost in Canada. And he's worried stiff. Maybe he has to convert. There's only one problem. His father is a Kohen, a total Shema Torah mitzvah. And he's a Kohen. Can you imagine? You're going to have a Kohen not just married to a convert, but that he himself converted. What a shayla. Anyway, I couldn't be samach on the conversion. They just say, go to mikveh with a based and do a conversion l'chumrah without a bracha v'shalom al Yisrael. I did my research, and Baruch Hashem, I was able to establish who converted his great-grandmother. Absolutely reliable Chassidic Rebbe who was living in Winnipeg at the time. Lived there till the early 70s when he came back to Israel, to Tzfat, where he was born, and later died in Tzfat and buried in Tzfat. And you have no problem whatsoever. And his mother, who married this Cohen, who was second generation, his father had survived Europe and was frum and dedicated in a Cohen, and the mother became frum to marry him. Baruch Hashem, you're a Cohen, lekaved ulatiferet, and should be seicha to many dorot yireim v'shleimim. So, all right, we solved that problem, but we couldn't fall back on the general concept a gerut lechumra. And if in Gris Kolel and in the other Kolelim of YU, the great Torah institution, and there you have the problem, halacha kama v'kama in everyday school across the world. So all right, this is one answer which won't solve the problem in day schools and Kolelim, but certainly solves the problem on a general level and where you work and the questions you get. Then he quotes the Tiferet Yisrael, the Maharsha. We'll see the sources. And here it's very powerful that what it means you can't teach a Gentile Torah, the reasons, the esoteric reasons, the Kabbalah, the deep overtones, the coloration, the hue that makes a Jew unique, that makes a Jew, that's what you can teach. But if it's just the general understanding, absolutely permitted. And this is a continuation of what we said with the whole concept of Torah Shebaal Peh, Jews only. Torah Shebichtav, and I'll expand it, that it doesn't necessarily mean just Tanakh, but if it's just reading This Is My God by Herman Wouk, you cannot say to Barnes & Noble, do not sell the book to non-Jews. Okay. Rav Ovadia goes even further, and he cites Rav Ovadia in a number of places, that look, imagine a guy comes to you with a question about Judaism, and you say to him, I can't answer you, you're a non-Jew, we're not allowed to explain this to non-Jews. Could there be, I'm quoting Rav Ovadia now, a greater Chilul Hashem than such an approach? Ribbono Shel Olam, that's like waving a white flag and saying, I can't defend myself, I can't explain myself. You're right, we're wrong. And absolutely forbidden to a Jew to act in this fashion. If it's a question of sanctifying God's name, I'm paraphrasing Rav Ovadia now, absolutely answer the guy in dignity, lekavod ulatiferet. All right? Then he goes further, the Sri Deyesh. And Sri Deyesh, again, one answer complements the other answer. It's not here a machlekes ha-paiskim. It's just hashlama, complementing, adding, strengthening, deepening. And this is the Sri Deyesh I quoted in great detail many years ago, that look, if a guy comes to a Jew not to establish a new religion, not to act as if he has the truth, but he's coming to the Jew, he wants to understand Torah. He loves the Jewish people. He loves wisdom. He wants to acquaint himself with the Jewish wisdom. Absolutely permitted to help him, absolutely permitted to enlighten him, absolutely permitted to have courses at the university, absolutely permitted to give lectures and shuls open to the public, let the non-Jews in. Adarabba, all the more we want to reach out to the non-Jews. Kizera Eva Kadesh, look at this religion. Look what we have. Wisdom, understanding, knowledge. Welcome to study. And then he quotes a Meiri. And the Meiri, here already, we come right down to Reb Moshe. All these prohibitions, so if a Gentile wants to remain a Gentile, a Goy will bleib in a Goy. But what about if he wants to see what this religion is about? And he may very well convert. He's looking for something. He's tested out Christianity. And you know how many converts we have that tell the story that they found out in the church that the root of the tree of religion is Judaism. They're just a branch. Islam is a branch. Catholicism is a branch. Protestantism is a branch. But the roots are all Torah. He wants to find out what Torah is about. Absolutely teach him. Inspire him. Let him convert. And this would apply to all the day schools, to all the kollelim, to all that we're speaking about. There is absolutely no problem if conversion may be the final outcome. And of course, that's the answer. How are you allowed to teach prospective converts, their goyim? Of course you're allowed to teach them. The whole purpose in teaching is to bring them to knowledge and a level of understanding and observance that they can convert belev v'nefesh. And look at the footnotes. Check it out. All these answers blend together. In contemporary times, he calls Rav Asher Weiss, that this question came to Rav Asher Weiss, and Rav Asher Weiss said, on a basic level, there's no problem whatsoever. What you're dealing with is broad ideas, general understanding. If the guy suddenly wants to get involved with whether you can carry on Shabbos or not, can you be Samach on an Erev, and the guy wants to get involved with all the little Kintalach, the little points, the pitchalach we say in Yiddish, there would be a shaila. But at the workplace, on the level that they're asking, the level that you're answering, the level that they're observing, absolutely no question whatsoever. So halacha lemaisa, I think we've presented a very broad case. Day schools, yes, the problem is real. In a perfect world, we could select the children, but even in a perfect world, do you really want to select the children? Do you have the whole question of Zera Beit Yisrael, the Beit Yitzchak, Reb Yitzchak Shmelkes? We've quoted this many times. This is Jewish blood in their veins. Maybe we have to encourage them. Don't send them away. The parents have sent them to a day school. Whatever the reasons are, if the parents are sending for positive reasons or negative reasons to avoid the public school, the drugs, the dope, the sexual misbehavior, whatever the reasons are. But there's Jewish blood in this kid. This is Reb Moshe, and it has a lot of contemporary implications. All right. Ad kan this particular shaila. Me'inyan li'inyan bo'to inyan, we come to a classic shaila, which very hard for me to talk about because I know all the Atmos Nefesh Rav Aaron Soloveitchik had in Chicago with this question. And I always see Rabbi Dr. David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Damo, and I have to be honest with you, I haven't made my peace. I go against Chazal. Chazal said, "Atat hamet lishtakach min halev," and it's many years now. It's not just 12 months. And David Applebaum, time and again, my wife say, "Where's David? Where's David?" Ugh, what a loss. What a loss. And David would yell at me, "Reb Aaron, for you it's history. For me it's living agmas nefesh. I went through it with my Rebbe." But let's begin at the beginning. I'm quoting now Mishnah Halachot Chelik Yud Siman Dalet. And it's from 1984, the Tshuva. And it's fascinating that by the 80s, Reb Menashe Klein already was a very well-known meshiv. And everyone turned to him because they knew he would answer every question. You find Satma turning to him, why are you people turning to him, Lubavitcher people turning to him, Tells people turning to him, Gerich Sidru from Israel, Panovichit turning to him. Everyone turned to him, and he answered. Now, this question, he responds, it's from the, I don't know what it's called, the Vad HaRabbanim in Chicago. What's the technical name? Merkaz HaRabbanim. What do they call them? Does that have an English title, Mark?
I know there's different organizations.
The Haredi one. You don't know. There's the RCA, you know, has a brand.
It's CRC, Chicago Rabbinical Council.
Chicago Rabbinical Council.
But this may be...
Maybe to the right of the Chicago Rabbinical Council. Okay. The names here are Yitzchak Wolf and Shneur Zalman Rakoff. But that's before your time. You weren't in Chicago yet. Okay. And what's the Shaila? All right, let me paraphrase the Shaila. And this is classic.
Can you get the
Chelik
and the Simani? I can't seem to find it.
Chelik Yud Siman Dalet. Oh, one second. Siman Chelik Yud. I see here on top Siman Kuf Tzadi Tet. Oh, Siman Resh. That's the answer. It's I read the Resh as a Dalet. I'm sorry. I can't believe it. What, Mark, how would you read that?
See a curve.
Very, it's mamish, very hard to make out that it's not a dalet. But okay, it's a resh. That answers your question. Do you find it? Jack, do you find it?
I'm looking now.
Chelik Yud Siman Resh. Thank you. Thank you very much for catching that mistake. Wow. Okay. The shaila is as follows. In Chicago, whatever the reasons are, Chicago developed a loud, dominant Orthodox community at a very early stage. It's not like today where, thank God, in Philadelphia you have Lower Marian Synagogue. Back in the 40 years ago, Torah Jews played no role in the greater Philadelphia scene. Chicago already at an early time was second to New York. It was always viewed as second to New York. I don't know today, I think it's still second to New York. There's New York, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles. Then you have Boston, Detroit, Philadelphia today. But the top three, at least as I understand it, are New York, Chicago, and LA. Now, the Federation in Chicago built a brand new beautiful mikveh. This mikveh was built by Federation money. It means that the money put into it is Reform, Conservative, Orthodox. The mikveh was built to be 100% kosher, and the supervision on the mikveh would be by the Orthodox Rabbinical Board. Now, obviously, if this mikveh was built by the Federation, then any Jew can come and use the mikveh. You can't stop anyone and say, "We're not letting you use the mikveh." It's a public mikveh. It's not a private mikveh. It is under Orthodox supervision, but it is absolutely open to Kol Yisraelim, quoting Reb Menashe Klein. Where's there a problem? problem is very simple. Orthodox Jewish women use the mikveh every month. Orthodox men, those that are Hasidic, use it every day. Those that are not Hasidic, you have various levels, those that use it Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontif, many use it Erev Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur. What's the problem? Geirut. Mikveh's use for Tefillat Kalim. It's a minor matter. But it's also used for Geirut. Major. Turning a non-Jew into a Jew. So the Orthodox use it. Everyone has to go to mikveh. Male, you have to have milut and tefillah. A woman tefillah. Of course, according to our understanding, along with the form, there is the norm, Kabbalat mitzvot. Kabbalat mitzvot? Now you have reformed conservative conversions. They all use the mikveh in Chicago. And they give you a certificate that you were nitbal or nitbala in a kosher mikveh. They state the mikveh, and you are now a Jew, and it's signed by the three Reform rabbis. All right, is this a kosher geirut? Absolutely not. You can go to mikveh 100 times over, but if there's no kabbalat mitzvah, then the mikveh does not get off the floor. It's not a geirut. And many of the right-wing, I would imagine, Orthodox rabbis, they're very upset by this. People are using the mikveh, Reform rabbis are using the mikveh, and announcing all over the world, we use the mikveh that is kosher l'mahadrin. These people are Jews. Can we agree to this? Is this not Messiah l'dei avera? But then, what are you going to do? Lock out Reform and Conservative? The rabbis will issue a psak that the mikveh, by contract, is under our supervision? We are not allowing Reform and Conservative rabbis to use the mikveh for their converts? If that happens, number one, the Federation can say this mikveh was built by Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox money. If you're going to stop Reform and Conservative rabbis from using it for their gerim, we will no longer contribute to the day schools in Chicago. I need not tell you, day school budgets run into, at that time, probably tens of millions of dollars. Today it's probably hundreds of millions of dollars. Without the Federation support, chas v'chalila, you may have to close the day schools down. That's one problem. Second problem, you're going to slap the face of the reforming conservative rabbis. They can say, fine, we're going to go out, we're going to build our own mikveh. Once they build their own mikveh, could very well be that in that neighborhood, Jewish women who observe Tarat Mishpacha will go to a mikveh that is not under proper hashgacha. I need not tell you this is not a simple question. It gets us involved, the undertones and the overtones, our relationship with Reform and Conservative. Synagogue Council. mixed board of rabbis, the very heart of our unity, a problem that haunts us until this very moment. Pluralism versus Na'aseh Nishma, Torah Hashem. What can we do? What can't we do? Where do we draw the line? Where can we join? Where do we have to be separate? Kesev Yanet HaKol, up to what point? On one hand, we're doing the Reform and Conservative a favor. We're taking your money. We're letting you do a mitzvah. You're keeping the day schools running. This is like non-Jewish money. Sacrifices coming into the Beit HaMikdash. We take it for your good, for your schut. But it can't be against halacha. Where do we draw the line? And here you publicize all over. Kosher mikveh, built by the Federation. Proper gera. And there's a side note here on page Resh Samach Hey. I'm quoting it correctly. Hey, not Chet. And at the first column, you look at the bottom, he says that the truth of the matter is that look at the bottom of the first paragraph on the first column that he says the Reform Conservative only use the mikveh for conversion. And they have so many conversions that they charge the person converting for the use of the mikveh $100. Al kol nachri hatovel sham l'shem giyur zen meya dala. And Rav Menashe Klein is told the number of converts every year is over 100. So that the mikveh is making a fairly good support. 100 times $100. And this is the shaila. Now, this question gets much more involved. And I'll tell you why it gets much more involved. It gets much more involved because on the very questions I've alluded to, we don't have one opinion. It winds up, you can have Jew versus Jew, Torah Jew versus Torah Jew. You can have so-called modern Orthodox versus Haredim, and you can have Haredim versus modern Orthodox taking exactly different opinions. And here we come to the Chicago scene. On the Chicago scene in the 70s into the 80s, you have two different concepts. One concept that caught on was the Telz Kollel. The Telz Kollel in Chicago was one of the most successful Telz divisions, branches, in all of America. All of you know that Cleveland went down immensely because you had to be part of the family to be a Rosh Yeshiva in Telz. Something we've spoken about many times. Lithuanian Torah institution, family owned. And it couldn't continue. When Rav Baruch Stretzkin died young and Rav Mordechai Gifter came back and afterwards, they didn't have the level that could attract. But there were branches open and Chicago, maybe it's open to debate whether the Chicago branch or the Riverdale branch today is the most important expression of Telz. But Telz certainly was a big force on the Chicago Torah scene. Then we come to Skokie. Mark, how is Telz today? Still very powerful? Yeah, still very. I would imagine Telz is even more than Riverdale, in my humble opinion. I saw Chicago, I saw Riverdale, They're both magnificent branches of Keles, but I think Chicago is the bigger one and the more important one. It's produced Sfarim, many Sfarim, Erev, etc. They're experts in Erevin that have come out of Keles, Chicago, etc. Skokie is a story unto itself. To be very brief, Skokie began in the mid-20s imitating Rabbi Revel in New York. Rabbi Fastman and others wanted to imitate Rabbi Revel. We have to have a yeshiva and a college under one roof. They have a high school, they have a college. Ultimately, they have some very powerful balabatim in Chicago. You don't have Rabbanim, the stature of Mori Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, his father of Moshe Soloveitchik, Rabbi Revel, Rabbi Belkin. The balabatim in Chicago played a much bigger role. There was difficulty in Skokie, I don't want to go into it now. Chicago Hebrew Theological College was the original name, HTC. Rabbi Soloveitchik is brought to Chicago. Rabbi Soloveitchik, on one hand, was the most flexible, nicest, easiest person to get along with. He was like his mother, they say. They say the Rav was more like his father, he was more like Rebbetzin Pesha. On the other hand, he was very firm and very strong, what he considered halachic principles. And here, he came into conflict with the Tells crowd. And Dafka here is just the opposite. The Tells crowd took a more lenient position, lenient in the sense of popular language. And Rabarin, who represented originally YU, his brother, Reb Moshe, Chicago Hebrew Theological College, Skokie took a more stringent position, and it was a source of great Achmas Nefesh, because Rebarin felt that the Tells crowd should agree with him in not allowing these conversions, which were publicized, taking place in an Orthodox mikveh. And the Tells crowd took a different point of view. From what I gather, they put in money. We can't close the mikveh to them. They contribute to the support of Torah. And the world will understand an Orthodox mikveh does not in itself make an Orthodox conversion. And you can see here, tremendous machloket. Two different points of view. And this question caused tremendous heartache for Rabban Soloveitchik. Ultimately, it was one of the factors that minimized, I'll use the word, his influence on the Chicago community. As you all know, Rabban, after he was fired by Hebrew Theological College by his strong balabatim, and this was not the issue that bothered them. It was an issue of money with a Mizrahi office building in the part of Chicago that already had no longer had Jews, and it was sold to some sort of, what was it, some sort of temple, and Rabban opposed it, and the balabatim just kicked him out. And Rabban opened up a brisk in Chicago, which in itself caused Achmas Nefesh and caused a split between him and Tells on a general concept. If you're allowed to open up something named brisk, and Rabban said, where am I any different than any other Soloveitchik? And he also inherit the mantle of Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, my grandfather. It was a source of controversy, and this added to the controversy. And as you know, Rabban went back to teaching in New York with all his illness and his stroke and his being limited to a wheelchair and a walker, and he commuted every week, which was something beyond bravery, beyond courage. There's no way to describe it. But this was also part of the Atmos Nefesh. Now, before we get into Rabbaran, we have a long way to go. I wanna do the tshuva of Reb Menashe Klein. And you'll see Reb Menashe Klein caught in the middle. You'll see his proposal. Fascinating, and also fascinating to see the proposal later, that when you know the Balabatam and you know Chicago, it really couldn't get off the floor. In an ideal world, what Reb Menashe Klein proposed would be fabulous. But in the real world of reform and conservative and Chametz on Pesach, I'm still shaking. Think the Labor Party, their reform rabbi in the Knesset, all he was dealing with before Pesach and during Pesach, we should be able to eat Chametz in the hospitals. I mean, this is just mind-boggling. And I hope the average Israeli will understand what's happened to the Labor Party. The founders of the Labor Party would be turning over in their graves if you told them their party is in favor of Merit Michaeli and Reagan eating chametz on Pesach in Jewish hospitals in Israel, beyond comprehension. But okay, let's begin. He handles it halachically. First of all, he says there are two questions involved. One question is there a lifnei'iva pashut lifnei'iva lo tipein michshol? If we allow them to use the mikvah and they can go around advertising in the entire world, the mikvah is an Orthodox mikvah. And it's an Anisha Lifnei'iva. We're responsible. It's under Orthodox Hashgacha, the Van HaRabbanim, the Federation agreed. The word is out that this is a state-of-the-art Orthodox mikvah. The second question, he says, is this a Chilul Hashem? Do the rabbis have to do everything in their power to stop them from using the mikvah? The third question, is it really a chashash that if we kick them out, they'll build their own mikvah? And women will think they can go to that mikveh once a month and be mutarot lebaleihem, that the mikveh is kosher v'yosha, even though it will be a mikveh built by reform and conservative according to their understanding. All right. Let me ask you, is there a lifnei'iva here? And if there is a lifnei'iva, who is over? So now he gets involved with the question, the nitty-gritty of running a mikvah. It's like a shul. I daven in a small shul. It's a minyan we resuscitated for Mincha Maariv during Corona. Reasons why. I'm one of the organizers because they allowed me to sit in the shul where there would be heat or air conditioning, and I didn't have to daven outside. I just can't stand that. You know, my age, Baruch Hashem, I'm alive and kicking, but the body is 84 years old. It's a different physical reality. So in this shul, a lot of people who daven there live in their houses right next to it. So I always get to Mincha a little early. I don't want to get to shul late. I'm standing, I stand, I lean against the wall. I have Xerox sheets with me of Gemara. Not a problem. But people always come and ask, why isn't the shul open? All right. The person who has the key, a few people have keys, they get there 5 minutes before the time, etc. Who runs the mikveh? The person with the key. And in the federation where this mikveh was built, there is an individual who is responsible for the mikveh. He is the shomer hamikveh. He's the one who opens it. Rav Menashe Klein calls him the Shomech HaMikvah, perhaps in Rabbinic Hebrew, the Balon of the Mikvah. He's in charge. Well, if the only way you can get into the mikvah is through this individual, then he is the one who is over on the Fne'iva Lo Titein Mikshol. And the rabbis have nothing to worry about. But if, on the other hand, the rabbis also have a key. This is the man they hire. This is the man they pay a salary. This is the shomer hamikvah. This is the balon of the mikvah. He is responsible. He runs it on a daily basis. The Reform and Conservative are going to call him, going to make an appointment to use the mikvah. He's the one who's going to answer the phone and give them a time to come. But if the rabbis, one rabbi, there's a rabbi, they inspect, they also have a key. He's not the only one. This is like kashrut. How do you do kashrut? How do you deal with the meat coming in? Who runs the frigidaire? Who has the key? These questions come up 1,000 times over in Hashgacha, particularly outside the land of Israel. Here in Israel, all right, I hope that we have Cheskas Kashrut, people involved in Kashrut and running a restaurant, running food, food coming in. And like I say, it's very hard to buy something non-kosher. You have to go out of your way to be devious and go to the Arab areas and buy something non-kosher. But in Chutz La'aretz, the Shmulga Bernsteins, the meat coming in the middle of the night, who's there to receive it? Where's the key? Well, if the rabbis have a key in addition to the Shomer HaMikvah, then there's no Lifnei Iver, not on them, not on the rabbis, not on the Shomer. When is there Lifnei Iver? It's the Gemara in Nazir. It's a well-known concept. When only this person can mislead you, that's Lifnei Iver. But if you can buy the treif food elsewhere, then there's no lifnei iver. You have a choice. You can buy here, you can buy there. When a nazir can get the wine here, or he can get the wine there, or this side of the I'm paraphrasing Gemara, this side of the little river, the lake, and the other side of the lake, if he has choice, there's no lifnei iver. But then another question comes up. And here already, it's not so simple that the rabbis don't have a prohibition. What am I referring to? Let's come back to the question that I've spoken about so many times and still haunted by. State of Israel, you're walking in Yerushalayim on Shabbos, a car stops and asks you directions. What do you answer? What do you say? So I told you, I wrote to Reb Moshe, I didn't get an answer because I'm sure that my question was censored, that they were worried it's a political issue with Israel, Reb Moshe shouldn't get involved. I asked the Rav, and the Rav told me, give them the most direct directions that you can, L'ma'et b'chilul Shabbos. And this concept, this is thinking that comes up all over Chabad, may come up in relation to the Shiloh that I began an hour and a half ago with Maplewood South Orange. They're going to be driving anyway. If you can pinpoint how to drive, I remember saying to Rebbe, it's particularly an interesting Shiloh in Yerushalayim, where all the streets are one way, basically. If you get lost, you got to go 10 times around. If you know exactly how to go one way, the right way, you get there quickly. Same thing with shul. What are you worrying about the Rav Shalom? You have to open a shul. People are going to drive in shuls, they drive in shuls. But then again, when they're sitting in shul, they're not driving. Could be by opening the shul. Chabad uses this thinking. By their being in shul Shabbos, 2.5 hours, they're not going to be driving. All right. So the Rebbe answered me, give them the most direct directions. When I come back to Israel, I told Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, I said to Aaron, this is what Rebbe said, what do you think? He said, no, I don't agree. If you give directions, it may not be a lift naiva, because they can ask you directions, they can ask another person directions, no lack of people to ask. But it's Messiah Ledei Avera. In reality, you're helping them sin. And Rabbi Aaron would say, if they ask directions, you have to say, I don't live in this neighborhood, I don't, can't really answer you, I'm only a guest. I don't know how to translate that term, not in English, but I'm not native, I'm not indigenous to this neighborhood. I know, I'm Loma Komi doesn't sound as earth-shaking as I'm not indigenous, so I'm not native, but maybe it's because of my appreciation of Hebrew, I understand that Loma Komi is not such a... Just not here, I'm visiting for Shabbos, that's all. But if that's the case and the Rabbanim have the key, so willy-nilly, and you're giving them permission to use, and they can go around boasting that they're using an Orthodox mikveh and therefore it's an Orthodox conversion, no doubt about it. Mishayeya lidei avera. Okay. And this is the way he begins. We'll come to a number of fascinating points in the tshuva, and the whole question of how much can you protest? How much can you accomplish by protest? How much can you accomplish by yelling, by shouting? And here I'll take you, I went into the class, I mean, it's no black and white answer. Here you take Uri Pilichowski's article today, how he meets with the American ambassador to Israel and they establish the friendship. And I take you back a few weeks ago, a guy named Rakefet said publicly that Israel should have self-respect and should have said to the American government, we don't accept this man as an ambassador. He's a Jew married to a Gentile. He has non-Jewish children. It's the end of the Jewish people. It's the silent Holocaust. All right. Do you agree with me or disagree? I don't think there's right or wrong. I think my position is 100% solid. Now, take the article in today's Post, which is worth reading, Uri Pilichowski. He established the relationship. He wrote to the ambassador. He criticized him for the way he said he will never visit Yehuda v'Shomron. And Uri lives in Yehuda v'Shomron. His wife is mayor of the yeshiva where he lives. And he established the relationship. Tell me, isn't that better than Rakefet's approach? I don't know. Think about it. And I don't believe there's a black and white answer. What will the end results be? And maybe Uri will achieve more? Or maybe he's just being obsequious when he shouldn't be. This is, you're dealing here with difficulty. It's not black, it's not white, it's gray. What's better? What do? We have a kosher mikveh. We didn't pay for it. The community paid for it. Can you lock out the Reform and Conservative? And they're not going to say our gerut was not correct. Our gerut was done in an Orthodox mikveh. Can't contradict that. Which is better? Okay, this is the question Rabbi Menashe Klein gets. And he begins with a simple discussion, is there lifnei iver, misayei lidei avera? But then, do we have to protest? What can we accomplish? What is the obligation? What can rabbis do? And you'll see how he goes on and on and ultimately makes a proposal. You can weigh the proposal. Doesn't get off the floor, his proposal, but his heart is in the right place. And then we'll come to Rabban Soloveitchik, which for me personally is sad because I know how much Rabban suffered. And this problem haunts us. I'll come back, let me end off with one more conversation with Rabban. I've also quoted many times when the synagogue council closed down. So right afterwards, that summer, I was walking with Rabban in the old city. His son, Rav Yosef, was pushing the wheelchair, Rabban, and I was right on the right side of the wheelchair. And I said to Rabban, why are we so happy that synagogue council closed down? Your brother, my Rebbe, supported synagogue council. He just put down one condition. They can't speak in the name of halacha. The Orthodox have veto power. Fine. But outside of that, on general issues, economic issues, anti-Semitic issues, Zionist issues, Rabban said, the Mori Rebbe was in favor, I said to Rabban. Rabban answered me, yes, that's true, but the Reform and Conservative today have gone much further away from Yiddishkeit. I don't believe my brother would support them today. And remember, this was a time already when patrilineal, the Reform, more than patrilineal, the Conservative already were ordaining female rabbis. The world was starting to shake. All right, we didn't hit the stage we hit today where there's no difference basically between Reform and Conservative. But the world was starting to shake. My brother would no longer have such an open approach to them. All right, this is the very heart of the problem. Where do we draw the line? How much can we be with them? How much can we allow a pluralistic feeling to become public? How much does the world understand? This is halacha, this is non-halacha. Here we cooperate, here we don't cooperate. These questions haunt us. I don't see any black and white answer. But I just described Lori Pulichowski. Read his article today. Relive what I said. Who's right? Is there right? What will the results be? And imagine if 2 years from now we read that the former American ambassador to Israel became a Baal Tshuva as a result of his stay in Israel and his friendship with Uri Pulichowski, his wife converted, etc. Okay, food for thought. Halavai. Okay, give me 1 second. Baruch Ator, and Mel Cholam, Shakol Yevet Barov. To reiterate, what did we do today? We finished out the whole question of teaching Torah to Gentiles, children in day schools, young men in Koilalim. Of YUN, if YUN has the problem, I guarantee you other Kailalim have the problem. It's a Shaila that has many implications, answering the Gentiles in the workplace. All right, in the state of Israel, I don't think that's a problem. We have an obligation to answer Jews who ask questions like that. But what about outside of Israel? Non-Jews, Protestants, Catholics, Buddhists, perhaps Muslims, good people asking these questions. Okay, I gave you an interesting source which gives you many other sources. Halacha l'maisa, I would say if answering creates dignity for the Jewish people, no question you're about to answer. If, on the other hand, the guy starts observing Shabbos and Kashrut to his understanding, you have to say to him, look, we don't believe in your creating your own religion. you have to think, where do you belong? And if you're a Christian, you're a good Christian. Just observe the seven mitzvot, b'nei Noach. If you feel Judaism speaks to you, then we'll advise you how to come closer. But it's a fascinating question. Again, we're mature individuals. The dividing lines are not black and white here. You have to have a certain emotion, a certain insight, a certain psychic understanding, and then we can take it further. All right. Then we began the question that we'll handle next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, the Federation Mikvah in Chicago. Reform and conservative using it for conversion. Do we encourage them? Do we try to stop them? Do we negate them? What is our approach? Mark, do you know what mikvah we're talking about in Chicago? This big mikvah, beautiful mikvah, built by Federation money, or?
I think I know which one.
Where is it?
It's not so new anymore.
It's not, of course it's not new. This tshuva is 40 years old.
There's one of the main ones is on Tui.
Which is Tui what neighborhood?
West Rogers Park.
Oh, West Rogers Park. That would make sense, because that's where they would build it 50 years ago. That would make sense. Okay. Tomorrow morning, Be'ezrat Hashem, we will pick up exactly where we left off. And as I said, I'm going to show you one of the Karim where the Rav, the Sachma, and the Lubavitcher all are in total agreement. And I had a postscript, Baruch Hashem, that I had enough seichel not to listen to them. With all due respects, my Rebbe Muvhak, the Lubavitcher, and Nishtar Kleinikai, but I'm a Talmud, not a Chassid, as you will see, and I'll show you halacha l'maisa, those who asked and listened, and those who didn't ask and didn't have to listen. All right? So until we meet again tomorrow morning, Be'ezrat Hashem, at 9 a.m., we should only have the Surah Tova, Yeshut V'Nechamot, Aleinu V'al Kol Yisrael, Das V'Danya. Mark, unmuted.
Okay.
Are there any questions from the erudite audience listening across the world? We had three continents on today. I saw United States, England, and the State of Israel, Baruch Hashem. Yes. Nachum Lam, Mazel Tov to you. It was a beautiful davening yesterday. The Kohanim ruled the world, and you should have lots of nachat. Everything should be well with your family. Now,
my parents are very moved that you came. Yeah. They're very appreciative.
Right. They're nothing to be moved on. We appreciate it. I just apologize my wife can't come, but that would have been the pikuach nefesh, plain and simple. Not only a misayeli de avera, but mamish a full avera in the full sense of the word. Did your father get home safely? I worried about his walking. Okay, good.
Yeah, sure. You know, we walked back, but we took our time. You know, their benches, sat down, and... Yeah, everything, can't wait to visit.
It's open,
yeah.
Okay, and it was a nice Shabbos yesterday. There were no helicopters overhead when my daughter came to visit us in the late afternoon. Her first question was, did you hear any helicopters? We said, no, we heard none, she heard none. So we said, all right, it's a good sign that there were no local problems. But there are enough problems beyond us, the funeral, the bullet, and we get blamed for everything. It's just beyond words. But all right, Be'ezrat Hashem. At least we have nachat, the Bible contest, and I still rejoice my dear student, Rabbi Dr. Mark Licht, one of the judges on the American side of the ocean, and there I saw him in YouTube. You see everything, it's beyond words. So, all right, Be'ezrat Hashem, it should only be good news. Okay, if there are no more questions, we'll clear the room. And until we meet again in health and happiness, thank you very, very much for honoring me with your presence. Das v'danyah.